Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello, good evening, everybody. Thank you for joining us, all those who tuned into the show about Virginia just now and have come over here. We've got Christian Ross, phenomenal speaker. He was once a devoted follower of the darkness, though. He now walks in the light of Christ, and he's going to open up about his journey from Satanism to salvation, revealing the battles he faced, the lies he believed, and the divine encounter that changed everything. Wow, it really sounds like you've been through it, man. Before we get to all that, though, huge thank you for coming on. And what led to all this? How did this come about?
Well, definitely didn't just happen one day. It's a long story. And I'm not even sure where to start, but I guess as far back as I can remember, I think it started when I was 10 years old. My parents, they split up, and I was living in Toronto, Ontario, Canada that time. And my mom took us all the way from Toronto to Prince Edward Island, Canada, which is a pretty small island, not a lot of people here. And it was quite the change. I went from a big city to a country town with a lot of country people, which was a change that I need to get used to right away. So I was thrown into it immediately. And it was kind of a whole change in lifestyle. And being that young, I was still trying to figure myself out and what life is about. But I remember early on during those times, I was just questioning reality itself, basically. Like, what is life? Why do we just get up and eat and, you know, go to bed? And that's it. That's life. Like, we go to school, we eat. Is that it? There's got to be something more to this. And I just liked spending a lot of time in nature. It was a very boring way to live in PEI. You know, your closest neighbors could be a mile away from you. And it just was not a fun time growing up. And I had a lot of time on my hands, and I got used to nature. I loved, you know, going and walking around the woods by the brook, fishing for some trout. I liked watching the animals, skunks and raccoons and all sorts of different animals. And I used to spend a lot of time with myself outside watching the stars. And that kind of fueled my thoughts on what is life. Is there a God? Is there something more to this? And that's kind of where my search into esoteric knowledge, I guess, started at that point.
So that sounds not too dark yet.
No.
How did it take a turn into the darkness?
So basically, that this was around the time, I would say 1995, I was 10 years old. So the internet was kind of a thing. Some people had it, some people didn't. We definitely didn't have it at that time. So just looking into basic books about God, different gods, different religions, that's kind of where it started. And back in those days, the encyclopedia was kind of the closest thing you could get to reading about anything. Other than that, I would go to the library. I would check out books about, there was the Egyptian Book of the Dead. And this is when I'm like 11 now, 12-ish, and I'm starting to get as many books as I could possibly find at the library on just everything, the Quran, which I didn't really like. I thought it was pretty boring, to be honestly. Read the Mahabharata, which is the Hindu religion, and just a whole bunch of books. And one book stuck out to me, and it was about Wicca. So Wiccan magic, their beliefs. And since I was into nature at that time, that one really gravitated towards me. And I started practicing Wicca. And, you know, back then, what I can remember from it is it's a lot of elements, like a lot of nature stuff. Like you're implementing fire, earth, wind, water elements using crystals, moon, tree worship, which was a thing. I did talk to trees. I implemented that. They never talked to me back, but, you know, I would focus on feeling their energies, things like this, alignments in the stars. So it kind of progressed past that point. But the one thing that I did take from Wicca that did work was seemingly there was a ritual early on where it was kind of like a self-healing protection spell, which kind of molded into a self-healing kind of deal. So I knew that worked. And that's something that I kept as I moved on and progressed through witchcraft and then Satanism. That was the one thing that I remember from Wicca, is what I remember. And a lot of people think Wiccan is like good vibes, good, you know, maybe modern Wiccans think about manifestations, but no, it's all birth in darkness. And there's no light witch, dark witch, it's all dark, and just some mask themselves as white. So, you know, don't be deceived there. It's all from the same source, which I learned later on. But that's how it started anyways.
Okay, so as you're starting this out at such a young age, are your parents noticing this? And what faith were your parents?
My dad was a non-believer. He didn't believe in God. My mom was a Catholic, but I think she only did that to please her mom, my grandmother. My grandmother was a very devout Catholic, went to church all the time. And, you know, I used to tell this my testimony, and I would forget this part, but there was a certain part of me being around 11 to 12 where I would go to Catholic church with her, but I didn't really believe it. I thought at that time the Catholic church was just for a lot of old people who are dying and, you know, just want to have some relief in knowing where they're going after they're dead. That's what I thought of it, because it was, you know, all elderly people. There wasn't anybody my age. And we kind of just did it as a favor to our mom. I mean, we kind of had to. We can't really say no or we'd get in trouble. So it was a forced thing. And I remember going to like a few catechism classes, served as an altar boy for like maybe 2 or 3 weeks. It wasn't very long. That's why I always forget that part. But still, the thought stays the same. I never believed in Jesus. I didn't believe this was real. But it was just a thought in passing. So that never was for me at all. I disliked it heavily.
Yeah, I was raised Catholic, and I was an altar boy for several months. Yeah, fortunately, the priests never got their hands on me, but I've heard so many stories about those kind of things happening. Okay, so, you know, you said you're around 10, 11, you're getting these books, you're in tune with nature, so the Wiccan is resonating with you. How did it progress from there?
So I just remember this was now 13, 14-ish, getting around early teens. And I started to develop an extreme hatred. Like, I was angry all the time, and I couldn't explain it. It was just the only thing I did have love for or did like was nature. That's where kind of my escape was. Where, you know, I would talk to the trees, or I light a fire, I'd talk to the stars or the moon. But in my normal day-to-day life, I hated people. I hated everybody that I went to school with. You know, here it's kind of, they all grew up in their little cliques, and I was the outsider, and there's no place for an outsider out here with, you know, which what I would call a bunch of rednecks back then, sorry to use the term, but it was kind of like that. Just so you have an idea of the type of people that I was forced to go to school with. And there were a few nice people, but I didn't have basically any friends. The only friends I had were on my hockey team when I played hockey. And even then, I didn't like most of them. So I was a very angry individual. I spent a long time in isolation. And with that, my mom never knew that I was seeking these ways of God, I would say, or these hidden knowledges that I looked through. I didn't really talk to my mom. I didn't talk to my sister. And they pretty much didn't know anything about what I was doing at all. So I kept it hidden from them and everybody else, all my friends as well. So they didn't really know much. I remember when I was getting into hockey, I was getting into a lot of fights and my anger just progressed and progressed to where like I couldn't even go to like the nearest town shopping where somebody would look at me the wrong way, and I would be the type of person that would confront them. I would be like, what are you looking at? Do you have a problem? I would be that type of person. And it sucks looking back because I was a really dark individual, and going through hockey, getting into so many fights, I started to research more and found more books. And the books that I was finding now and learning about the internet when it was first birthed, yeah, it was kind of like Ask Jeeves was the Google at that time. So I used that, and I would find certain spells. They were just really weak ones. I was just seeking darker things. So I had to go to other places, and I started to find these other websites, these other books from the library that I kept constantly ordering. And that was teaching me about witchcraft. Witchcraft was kind of the propeller that brought me into Satanism. But witchcraft, I stayed there for many, many years. And you still do use witchcraft in Satanism. I was a different kind of Satanist. I was a solitary witch when I was doing witchcraft. I wasn't in a coven or part of a coven, so I don't really know what that's like. I hated people, so you can get me into a coven if you try to. It's mm-hmm. just not something I would have been comfortable with at all. And I just remember learning about really dark things in witchcraft, and it progressed from there, I guess. I started using simple money spells. My mom promised me she would give me a dollar for every assist, or a dollar for every goal in hockey, and $2 for every assist. So I would start doing simple money spells. And I quickly rose to the top of my team, and I was a fourth liner. So, you know, I quickly moved up to the first line, and that happened in such a short period of time that I was kind of convinced that this was working. So I tried doing other spells, like I was doing love spells now at this time. And I was an outsider at school. I didn't have any friends. I was being bullied. And after that love spell, I remember one of the most popular girls out of school, she just called me at my house. Don't even know how she knew my phone number. And she wanted to start hanging out with me, start dating me, which brought another bully problem. So, you know, the things I did do, they did work, but then it brought other problems with it, which is kind of a thing that happens, but that people don't really know about it. You send this stuff out there, but it's going to come back to you. And people, you know, combat that with certain protection spells and all that, but it's inevitable eventually. And that's what really happened to me later on down the road.
All right. We're gonna get to that. Let's go over this as it progresses then. So, you know, you're at the level of doing spells and stuff. What about like rituals or animal sacrifice? Did you encounter anything like that yet?
So I would say this is about 16, 17 at this point. Have a few years of witchcraft under my belt, and I started to learn about Satanism. That's when I started to get into the ritualistic sacrifices, the blood rituals, blood sacrifices, dark magic, dark black magic spells, black magic spells, death spells. But I remember early on was, I would say, blood magic, and which you do a normal spell. I'm not going to say how you do it, but during that spell, you use your own blood to emphasize the power of it. I don't know how that works, but there's something about the blood, and it just made the spell more powerful. And so I was getting into that. Like, I even have scars. Like, I don't know if you can see my arms, but there's scars all the way up and down. Like, that's just for my blood ritual spells. It's all down this, on my legs, on my chest, anywhere that I found a fresh spot. It's kind of an offering to the spirits to aid you in this spell so that you're not just doing it with your intent. You're matching it with the spirit, the demonic spirit that you're working with at that time. And how I found those spirits out was I had bought a Ouija board. So I was doing spells, reading everything I could, all the books that I could gather. And I would write the things down that worked. Like I was like a witch scientist. I would take every single thing that would work, certain time of night, certain star alignment. You do this on a blood moon, a blue moon. You do this on the winter solstice, summer solstice. You do this during Saturnalia. I would use every single thing that would work. Then I would use blood with it and test it, and it would be more powerful. The success rate of the spell would be higher. Because one thing people don't understand is some spells don't work because of one missing element. You're just doing one thing wrong. And when you try the spell the first time, it doesn't work. It's like, oh, this is garbage. So that's what I would have to do. I would have to test and try them out. And I only kind of learned this afterwards when I had talked to those spirits during my Ouija board sessions. And mind you, my Ouija board was made out of my own blood and wood that I carved. So this isn't your Walmart Ouija board, although those are still evil, you know, apparently, if you know what you're doing and you call upon certain spirits and open doors, it's a great way for them to enter your life, whether you know it or not. So I just, you know, want to say that. But mine was of a dark nature. I did a ritual spell on it, and I was communing with demons at this point. I no longer needed my books because these demons, two in particular, they have names. I'm not going to say them, but I was strictly learning by them at this point. And I would say, this spell didn't work. Why? And they're like, okay, well, you didn't do it at this certain time of night, or you didn't do it facing this direction. And, but you know, you use this different kind of candle when you should have been using this and burning it like this. And so I was straight learning from demons at this point. There was no book that was going to teach me at this point. I've kind of progressed past the literature. And I remember even getting the Satanic Bible by Anton LaVey. And when I read it, because that's what I thought it was. I thought it was a Satanist. I would worship the devil. But, you know, the devil never really talked to me or spoke to me. But those entities would. And they would call him their father, or sometimes the one who is, or the true one. I never really had a belief in God at this point, because what I had found was working. So this is what I knew, that I figured out some sort of secret that the rest of the people didn't know about, and I wasn't going to share that with anybody. This is, you know, I was a prideful individual, but this was really working in my life. So other than the spells, for my own personal gain, and reading that book by Anton LaVey, it was kind of a joke to me. Like, some of the incantations in that book were just a little weird. Some have element of truth in it, but a lot of that book is a lie. It's just a hook to draw people in. It's a mask saying, "Oh, us Satanists are good. We care about everybody. Treat everybody like you would like to be treated." But you know. Glorifying your own will, lust, desires. It's just an oxymoron in a way. And I kind of saw through that, and I'm like, this is not for me. Put that away. Forgot about it. And yeah, just continued seeking my own power and status. And the biggest thing for me looking back at that was I focused mostly on curses. So I guess somewhat hexes too, but mostly curses. Because I would go around treating people very nice, as nice as I possibly could, because if for some reason they were rude to me or nasty to me or betrayed me at any point, then that was my reason to get back at them, because I was nice as possible to them. There is no reason for you to be nasty towards me or hateful towards me at all. So that was my reason to curse them. and that's what I do. I would use every opportunity at a sleepover to take a piece of someone's hair, maybe find a toenail clipping. Even I remember one time at lunchtime, one of the guys I was doing a spell on, he was drinking 7-Up or ginger ale, and he put the can down, and I took the can home because his DNA was on top of the can. Anything, a picture of that person would work too. And that's as much as I'm willing to say there, but it had to be something that related to that person, and that brought real power. And so I started a long time doing curses and seeing them work and just enjoying it. I would then add drugs. So then I started experiencing drugs, then doing spells. And it was just a long, long, dark time during that time. And it's just, I was a hateful person, and I did what I could to others who displeased me. I used to have a saying, if you mess with me, you mess with me times three. It's kind of like a Wiccan saying, but not really, because they believe that if you put something in the universe, it'll come back multifold, like three times. But with me, it's if you mess with me, I'll mess with you times three. So whatever you did to me, I'll do to you three times as worse that you did to me. And that was kind of my mantra at that time. And I got into a band, and that's when I started putting spells into my music so that my spells wouldn't just affect a person or an individual on that level in this plane, but it would reach multiple people, as many as I could in that sense.
So I'm curious then, with Anton LaVey, what kind of an influence was he having on you at this time of your life? And I've put a picture up on the screen for the viewers to see him. Is he the kind of guy you were looking up to?
It sparked my interest because I didn't hear much about Satanism at the time. And what I was searching into when I was getting into ritualistic dark magic was, his name came up, and the Satanic Bible. I mean, that sounds cool to me at that time, right? So I ordered it, and when I read it, I was just displeased. I didn't really like the fact that he was saying that they don't actually worship the devil. It's like, I'm like, what kind of Satanist is this guy? So I kind of lost a lot of respect after reading that book, because at this time, like, I'm learning straight from demons. I'm seeing these spells work, and the things that he's saying isn't matching up to the lifestyle that I am seeing before my eyes, that it's realer than real. And I don't know, he just kind of seemed to me like a con man. But knowing the realism of the spiritual and the war that we are in, I know for sure, deep down, he probably believes in darker things that he doesn't mention. Probably for a commercialism basis. I have no idea why, what his motive was, but he wasn't speaking true dark truth. And I know that he probably does know dark truth, because he shared some elements of it in the book, but he ignored a lot of others and just straight out lied about others. So it was confusing to me, to be honest.
So how old did you say you were when you joined the band, and how did your life change at that point?
That was around the 16 era, 16, 17. I would say probably 15, 16, 17. That was an interesting time. We were kind of like a rage. Well, at first we were Rage Against the Machine and Tool cover band, so we would play their songs. Then we started to make our own music. And my guitarist, he was the writer of most of my lyrics. But some songs I would change out the verse or the chorus or the end or the hook. And I'm like, I'm taking this out and I'm putting this in. And I mean, he did kind of have to just let me, because I was the vocalist. And in my hook or in my chorus was a straight up spell. And I don't know if he ever caught on to that, but that was kind of me trying to please the demons and getting them to help me to do better works for them. Get them on my good side, I guess you could say. They would always say that they're my friends, but they were not my friends. I realized later, looking back, that they're just trying to take you away from God as far as they can, and then they'll try and end you when you're no longer useful to them. But at that point in time, I was useful to them. I was speaking to people on the street about the devil, about Satanism, about witchcraft. Early on, I didn't want to share that with anybody. But as I grew closer to these demonic entities, I would try and please them any way that I could. So from time to time, you know, I'd reach out to other people. And I think a lot of pride was there too, where I'm like, I know something you don't. And so it was a mix of that. But mostly at that time, I was consumed by the band, getting those spells ingrained in those songs, and then getting those songs out there. We did tour the island, so we were gaining popularity. But it quickly folded after I kind of refused to go further with the demonic when I found something out that was really evil that I didn't want to be part of at all. So I was really trying to need to drink a lot of water.
So all this, all right, take your time. We've got Christian's YouTube channel link and contact in the description box. We put his channel link in the live chat if you want to subscribe. So all this is happening, you know, you're just a teenager, so much happening. I mean, did it get even worse as you approached 20?
Yeah, that's kind of where the separation kind of happened, actually. So at this point, I would say 19, 20, yeah, around there, I was doing what you call a black death spell. I did it twice, and it worked, and it always worked 7 days after I did it. I'm just wondering, I don't think it's appropriate to share what happened, because I still live here, and people know me here, and that might cause a lot of issues emotionally. So I'm just going to say they worked. I found out that when you do those types of spells, it doesn't affect the person directly, but it affects the person that they love the most, so that their pain is multiplied like 100-fold. Let's just say, if you did a death spell on somebody and their brother or their sister or their family member died, it would be worse for them than you having done the death spell on that person, because they have to live the rest of their lives with that person they love the most not being there anymore. I'm saying it in a veiled sense. I hope you understand where I'm going with that. But this is when I started seeing very powerful things happen, and things were getting very serious. So I remember sitting down, I was drinking beer, smoking joints, and I was asking one of the entities how I would gain more power. Like, what is the next step? Because I've seen some pretty intense things. And what is the next step? And they told me two things. They said either it was a destruction of innocence spell or the death of love. And the destruction of innocence spell was pretty nasty. It involved any destruction of innocence within a child. So innocence was the realm of children. And the destruction of that innocence would be anything, either sexually, murder, and some other unmentionables, and even teaching witchcraft to them yourself. That's another form of destruction of innocence. That was pretty gross to me. That was vile. I wasn't into that. My mom, she was a foster parent, so we had kids all the time. Even though I hated people, I still like kids. Like, they're goofy, they're funny to me. So I didn't have any problems with kids. And that's the last thing I would have ever thought to progress me to a new level. So that brought in me thoughts of maybe these entities aren't here for me. If they're wanting me to do something like that, they're evil. Like, they're not here to help me. They're not my friends. They want me to do some evil stuff. So I said, is there anything else? Because I'm not doing that. If that's the way to obtain higher power, I'm out. And they said the death of love. What that was, like, plan B, I guess. And what that was you would have to kill somebody who you love the most, whether it be your family member. It had to be a human. So we're not talking like a pet dog. It had to be like your mom, your father, your sister, your brother, grandparent, your son, your daughter, the one that you love the most. When you do that, you obtain higher power. And they said that another entity would come and take its place. So if I did that, another entity would come and take its place of those entities I was dealing with, because those were lower caste demons, I like to say, because there is a hierarchy in the demonic kingdom. And I didn't know that back then. I know that now, but it seems that they were okay with working with me with these lower spells and these lower curses and everything I was doing. But once I crossed that red line, I guess, that's when another entity would come in and teach me from there. And
wow, that's really dark, man.
Yeah, and that's when I knew these things were totally evil, because I figured, you know, step two would be a little less harsh, not as harsh, or if not more harsh, than what they originally had suggested. So that's when I was like, okay, I'm done. I remember pushing the board away. I like chugged my beer. I'm like, man, this is crazy. So I ended up getting drunk that night, waking up the next day. I still remembered what happened because it was quite strange and off-putting. And then that was it. After that, I was like, I can't really progress further. So I guess I'm done. And I stopped doing everything relating to witchcraft, anything relating to Satanism. And that took me to eventually finding God in the end. What had happened was me and my friend Mike, and so I shouldn't mention names, but I've told this story before and he's fine with it. He's seen it. But we were homeless at this point in time. So right after that, like it was like maybe 2-3 months, we became homeless and I moved to Nova Scotia and we were living on the streets for about 2 or 3 years.
And how did that affect you?
That just made me kind of angrier, but I kind of pushed that down with more drugs. I got into basically every drug you could think of besides heroin, because I didn't like needles. So, you know, I've done them all. I hope my mom doesn't watch this, but, you know, cocaine, ecstasy, meth, crack, morphine, Dilaudids, copious amounts of Ritalin stacked on top of each other and crushed in place of cocaine when I didn't have it. Like every drug I could get my hands on, LSD, mushrooms, that was my life. I kind of just wanted to forget these entities, forget that part of life, and just, you know, just slept around, got mixed up with weird people. And at the end of those 3 years, I decided that this is not what I want for my life. So Mike agreed, citizens. And we hitchhiked to Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. That's where kind of my story, I guess, becoming a Christian started. But I had to mention all that backstory because it was a progression to this point. It just didn't happen. And those things I think are important, because when I look back at it, I can see the devil slowly planting seeds as I continued through life. So I can see it now. But at the time, I was oblivious. I was addicted to drugs. I just wanted to party all the time, constantly, and wanted to have sex with every woman I could get my hands on, because early on in Satanism, lust was a big thing. An offering of lust or an offering of your seed was a part of an incantation to envelop you in a certain demonic power. And I'm just going to say that. So lust I had always struggled with, and that was a big part. So I would always seek women, seek drugs, seek pleasure. Basically, that was my life. And I was just a horrible person. And during this time, we had met a man named Lloyd and a female named Jermaine. And I'll say their names because to tell the story, I have to relate back to them. But me and Mike, we were in a his dad had an apartment building, and we had gotten a room above his. And it was 2006, and it was June the 3rd. So we were, I definitely won't forget this date. I was sitting down, eating a bowl of ice cream, sitting on the floor. Mike was in the back bedroom. I think he was asleep. And there was another girl, Megan, and her friend named Dal, I think Dal or Dan. And we heard this knock, and it was almost 6 o'clock in the morning. And we weren't expecting anybody. Nobody knows us. We're just homeless people. The only people that knew us were Lloyd and Jermaine. And we hear buzz. I go to answer the buzz, and it's Jermaine. She said, "Hey, it's Lloyd and Jermaine. Can we come up for a couple smokes?" And I look at Megan. Megan's like, "No, no, no." But I already answered it, right? So I'm like, what are they going to do? Like, they're friends. So I buzz them in. I go back around the wall. I'm eating my ice cream. And I hear them open the door. And I see Jermaine walk to where Mike was in the back bedroom. And she's got this long crowbar in her hand. And she's walking super fast. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of weird. So I'm like putting my ice cream down. And then that's when Lloyd comes right in front of me. And he pulls out this monkey wrench, like the biggest wrench I've ever seen. And he goes like this and just nails me right across the head. Oof. And so I drop my ice cream and I get up and he goes back to hit me again. And I always mention this because I got to give Tito Ortiz a shout out because he might have saved my life. Well, it was really God, but I was into MMA and Tito Ortiz said, if someone's ever going to hit you, just grab the back of your head and just turn like that. And that's exactly what it did. I later became an MMA fighter, but that's a different story. So I went like that and he hit me right there. And when you hit somebody, you go to draw back again. So when he hit me, that's when I hit him. But I forget to mention, because I mean, it is kind of funny. But before that, he hits me, right? Sorry, this is 2006. My memory, you know, the order of it. I remember everything that happened, but the order. Okay, so as soon as he hit me, I get up like that. That's when he went like that around my neck with the wrench. And he's way bigger than me. And he went down like that to like knock it back. So when he did that, I grabbed onto it and jumped in the air. And then he went to do it again. So when he lifted up, I jumped in the air. That's when Jermaine came running back. And she hit me in the jewels. And she grabbed onto them and she put one leg on my upper leg and the other one on the shin of my other leg. And she was gonna rip them right off. And that's the moment where I said, like, in my head, if there's a God at all, please help me because I'm gonna die. Like, they're obviously gonna kill me. She's got my lower half and he's got this around my neck. So that's when my hand shot forward. I don't know why, but everything was orange at this time. Maybe it's because I got hit in the head. But my hand hit her in the face. Her head flew back and hit the stove, and her glasses flew off. So that's when she's crawling around looking for her glasses. And this is where the whole block part happened. So he let go of my neck because he seen me hit her in the face. So he was mad that it was his girlfriend. He let go of my neck, and then that's when he went to wail on me. So he hit me there. And I mentioned that because in the court report, from there to there was all black. That's how hard he hit me. I'm surprised he didn't break my arm. But when he did that, that's when I hit him. And I hit him again. And then I kept hitting him up against the wall. And then he fell down and dropped the wrench. And for a split second, I praise God I didn't do this. But I thought about picking up the wrench and just bashing his head. And that's how angry I was. But something just froze me and I just was stuck in place. And I was like, no. So I went to go run out the door. And then that's when Jermaine, I guess she got back up. And when I was trying to get out the door, she swung the crowbar and Megan caught it. Megan was right there. And it just barely hit me in the head. Ran down the stairs, ran outside. And I was like in my underwear. So I'm running down the streets of Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, down, just running. Like, these people just try to kill me. I'm losing my mind. And I get to this guy's house. This guy, I don't know him. He was just some random dude early in the morning. And I'm banging on his door, bang, bang, bang. And he's like, hey. I'm like, hey, two people just like home invaded me. They broke in my apartment and they just tried to kill me. Call the police. And he's like, okay. But this guy, I don't know, he was a pretty bad dude himself, I think. It's kind of like one of those guys who are just waiting for a reason to do something, because as soon as I told him that, his wife called the police. But he's like, come here. And he took me to a shed and he grabbed this hoe and he grabbed this other like stick thing. And he's like, let's go. And I'm like, are you serious? I'm like, okay. So we go back to his apartment. We start buzzing. No answer. And he's like, I don't like this. I'm like, yeah, me neither. Because I know there's three other people in there. So I'm thinking like they got up and just killed everybody because there's no answer, right? And I mean, this guy doesn't know me. So he's probably at this point like, what's going on? So we go back to his place. And then I see my buddy Mike and his dad, Steve, drive up with a car. They got there before the police did. So we drove back to his place because they said as soon as I ran out the door, Mike woke up because of the commotion. And he said Jermaine was putting the crowbar in his face and said, if it wasn't for your dad, you'd be dead too. Or I guess Lloyd was. One of them was. I can't really remember who it was. And then they just left. So that's when he went to Steve and they went looking for me because I ran out the door. But then the cops showed up. So they came up to Steve's apartment, which is the apartment right under ours. And Lloyd and Jermaine, I guess they went home and then they called Steve and the cop was like, put them on speaker. So he put them on speaker and they just started saying weird stuff. Like they were saying, like, we are sent by God to kill the Antichrist because in three days it will be 666, like June 6, 2006, 6 months, 6 days, 606. And it was because of, like, I was a Satanist, right? So I have, like, I don't know, I guess I'll stand up here. If you can see the six here, there's a six there and a six. So I have 666 on my body. But I don't know if they went crazy or what it was. And they're just convinced that I was the devil. And, you know, I play mind games with them sometimes. But I know deep in my heart that it was the demons coming to end me because I did not want to work for them anymore. When you stop working for these entities, then you're ripe for the picking. They're going to come and end you. And that's exactly what was happening to me. But I remembered in that moment, I said, if there's a God at all, like, save me because I'm going to die. And when that happened, I just kept remembering and I kept thinking it was Jesus. Jesus is God. And I went outside and I kneeled down on gravel rocks and I just started praying. Like, nobody taught me how to do this. It was just, I just automatically did it. And I just said, Jesus, I'm sorry for the way I've been living. Please forgive me for my sins. I'll find out more about you and I'll live my life for you at this point. I know you saved me. Thank you for saving me. And that's how I became a Christian. I went to church the next week. And then in September, I joined Bible college. And been a Christian ever since.
Congratulations, man. I just want to clarify some things here then. That was really intense. So you're saying that ostensibly they were attacking you because they believed you were the Antichrist. But if you go above that, they were actually being used as instruments by demons to get you because of your history.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
exactly. It's a weird thing. I found out later that they had smoked a bunch of meth that day. There was a lot of things said in the court report about why they did it. They later, because that's what they said on the phone, right, when the cop was there. But in court, they said that, oh, Lloyd was saying, oh, I thought he slept with my girlfriend, which was not what they said originally. So who knows? I mean, whatever their motive was, I can't really say. But to me, that was the enemy trying to get me. Because I knew probably something would eventually happen. They didn't seem like they were my friends after that. I remember one time when we were homeless, one of the things I tried to contact them again, and that was we had hired a prostitute. I mean, some of this stuff is graphic, but trust me, I'm leaving really graphic stuff out. There's a prostitute who we paid to lay naked on the table, and we got a Ouija board, and me, Mike, and our other buddy, we started playing the Ouija board on her stomach, and she got uncomfortable. She's like, my stomach hurts. And she tried to get up, and we're like, we'll pay you more money. She's like, no. And then she got up and got dressed, and that was it. And I was thinking, like, I can't even communicate with these people anymore, or these entities or demons. So I was like, I'm done. So that was my last real experience with them at that point, before the whole people trying to kill me thing happened. So I think it was because I was no longer useful to them is why they tried to end me. And I didn't know God. So, I mean, they were within the rate.
You got a few viewers asking these people who tried to kill you, how long had you known them beforehand?
Not long. when we were hitchhiking to Saskatoon, we failed at some point where we got stuck, and I think it was Greater Ontario, maybe. I can't really remember. We got stuck. No, it was Ottawa. And that's when Steve gave us a plane ticket to get from Ottawa back to Saskatoon. So we made it that far. I mean, we went to trucker stops and did that. That's a long story. Mike got pneumonia during that trip, almost died. But when we got to Saskatoon, we went to a 7-Eleven, and who was working there was Lloyd. And we're just looking for drugs, right? We're in a new city. We don't know where to buy pot. We don't know where to get cocaine. And he was like, yeah, I can hook you up. And he was a shady dude. So after his shift, we met him in the back where there's the dumpster there. And he said, yeah, we'll hook you up. So he got us cocaine. He hooked us up with drugs. And that's how I knew him. And then we met his girlfriend at the time, Jermaine. And I would say this was probably only 2 months before this happened. So knew them. But the last part of that interaction, like I stopped hanging out with them. Mike stopped hanging out with them because they were getting really weird. Like these people in their apartment, their whole wall was full of Bibles, like different denominational Bibles, different languages, different culture Bibles, and just massive amounts of weird looking statues and stuff. But they were not Christian at all. So it was very confusing why they had so many Bibles. But I'm guessing that mixed with the crystal meth and my tattoos and the fact that I used to try and play with their minds, I would say in passing to her, I said, you know, you remind me of Mary Magdalene. And I would say to Lloyd, you remind me of Jesus. And you know, that probably did something to them, I'm thinking, is my guess. And I can only, you know, just take my best guess, because you mix meth with any person who's a little off and you'll get some wild reactions from them for sure.
So you said there was some dark graphic episodes that you skipped over. At what point in your life did they happen?
Well, there's been some notable ones. I would say from 16 to 20, during that whole period of time where I was into witchcraft and into Satanism, like things that I don't want to share just because legal reasons for some. And not only that, but I don't think people should know about these things. Like sometimes I'll get emails and say, you know, how did you do this certain ritual? Or how do you do this and this. And it's like, I'm not going to tell you how to do that. I came from this lifestyle. I came from darkness. I came from evil. And the last thing I am going to do is point somebody to do such things. So I have to think very carefully about what I'm going to say. So I'm just trying my best. This is like the first live I've ever done. I've done some pre-recorded ones before, but you know, anything that I did mention was edited out, and I'm thankful for, because I realized that it would have caused more danger if people had heard that. So yeah, just some things I'd rather not mention for sure. Some creepy things though. I will tell you one creepy thing that I remember now. There's a, I don't know if people remember these. They're these little toys, like it's called an oogly. And if you Google it, it's like a little egg, and it's got eyes, and there's batteries in it, and it like vibrates and says certain phrases. It's kind of around the time of Furbies, when that was a big craze, or like Tickle Me Elmo. And my sister had this oogly, and she was deathly afraid of it. I don't know why. It just always sat in her cupboard that she never opened. And I asked my mom one day, I was like, why does Sherry keep this in their cupboard? And she's like, she's deathly afraid of it. And I'm like, okay. So I got the bright idea. Like, I would do stupid pranks to scare my sister all the time. And I put it in the doorway. So when she walked by it, she would see it. And I was planning in my mind, if she asked me, oh, did I put that there? I would be like, no, I didn't put that there. And I was waiting for them to get home the whole time. I was sitting in the living room. And then I hear it vibrate, and it said something. And I was like, okay, that's weird. So I go and I look at it, and it vibrated and said something again. And so I go and I pick it up. I'm like looking at the back. I take the battery pack. There's no batteries inside of it. And I remember that freaking me out a lot, because I started watching horror movies when I was 8 years old, seeing pretty much all of them at that time until I was 12, except the really old ones, the black and white ones. Those bored me. I was always seeking that thrill, you know, even at that young age. And one of the scariest movies that I saw when I was a kid was Child's Play. And that's a movie with Chucky. And in one of those scenes, I guess he's at the swing set and he says something, and the mom goes and opens the battery pack, and there was no batteries in it. That was the one of the scariest things I've ever seen in a movie. I mean, there's probably more that I should thought were scarier than that, but for some reason, that was the scariest thing for me. So when I picked that oogly up and I looked in the back of it, and there was no batteries, like, I was sweating. I was so scared. I told my mom, I told my sister. They didn't believe me because they play pranks on them all the time. But to me, that's like, you know, there are things in this world that happened that we can't explain. And even if we did explain them, people might not believe us. So even when I tell my testimony, even when I say and talk about these things and experiences, a lot of people aren't going to relate to them unless they were into witchcraft or were a Satanist or have done these things or have even seen these things as a Christian, demonic attacks, demonic spiritual happenings. It's hard for people to relate to these things. And I understand it. It makes complete sense to me. Like, if I heard somebody talking about these crazy things that are happening, I'd be a little like, really? But you just knowing myself and what happened, it's totally true. And not only that, I fear God. As a Christian now, I believe in him 1,000%. So I fear him. And if I were to say any bit of lie while I'm claiming to speak on his behalf or, you know, to bring him glory, that scares me more than anything. So I'm very careful about what I say. I don't want to embellish anything. I don't want to say anything that's not true, because I fear God and he will punish me for doing, for telling lies. So I'm very careful, try to be as careful as I can be with everything I'm saying. Just got to say that.
No, you're doing great for your first ever live, Christian, and we respect your boundaries. That's definitely a sensible approach. And you've got a few questions from the viewers. Are you okay to answer some questions?
Depending on what they are, sure, yeah.
All right, so let's see. The demonic voice. Here's a question from Rosie. How did the demonic voice communicate to you? Can you describe the sound and choice of words it used? Thank you for sharing.
It spoke to me through the Ouija board. It didn't speak to me audibly. So when I was using the Ouija board, I would use both hands on the placard or whatever it's called. And shortly after time, when it got more powerful, I was using two fingers, one hand. And then after that, it was one finger. So when it spoke to me, my one finger, I would have a pen in my other hand and I'd have a piece of paper. So when it was spelling, I would write what it's saying. And like, I have no control. It's one finger, right? So it's going fast. I'd ask it to slow down or speed up, and I would write exactly what it's saying. And then I would read what it said. Like, sometimes I couldn't keep up with it. I was writing it so fast. There's been other times where it taught me about automatic writing, which is you invite the spirit in you. I did ask to be possessed once. That was kind of crazy. It's like you can feel it taking over your body. You can bring your control back, but it's kind of hard. You just got to force your will stronger than it to do so. So it's not like 100% controlling you. You do have that free will to get yourself back. That's a whole nother thing. But when it came to automatic writing, when I would invite it in me, it would just write. And like, I could look up the ceiling, I could look at the sides, and it would say perfect sentences. So that's another way that I would communicate with it. But it was mostly through the Ouija board, if that answers the question.
Yes, thank you. So the next question is from Firecracker. He wants to know how old you are now.
I just turned 40 in September.
Okay. And the next question is from Louise. Can you give us an example of a curse?
Well, I can't say how to do it, but when I have seen some of them work in my past, I did one on this particular individual who had gotten to a bike accident and broke his leg. And it usually works 3 days after, at least for me. It was always in threes. I don't know why. But after I would do it, 3 days later, 3 days later. Another one, I mean, I can't attribute this to me. Maybe they had their own problems. But I was at a friend's house, and I was at a sleepover. And his mom and dad, they were, like, yelling at me for some reason. And it wasn't me that did it, but my buddy, right? See, this is live. I'm just mentioning names now because it's just commonplace in my head. But my buddy Ryan, he said that he told them it was me, but he did it. And I kind of forget what it was. It was bad. Like I broke he broke a table and blamed it on me or something like that. Anyways, they yelled at me. They said that maybe I should go home and maybe my mom should raise me better because, you know, I didn't have a dad growing up. I mean, he was still alive at that time. He has passed since, but it just extremely angered me. I was so mad at that. So I went home and I did a blank, I'm not going to name it, spell, or I guess curse, where I curse his mom and dad. And this one took a little longer, but it was about a month later where she had, I guess, slept with his brother, so her husband's brother, and they got divorced and broke up, and that was that. I mean, could be a coincidence, you know, but I don't really believe in coincidences. So that's another example. But people being harmed and being injured, sure. It's a lot easier to curse an unbeliever. The only trouble I had with curses and hexes on people were Christians. I still can't explain it other than my thoughts on it now are probably that they have the Holy Spirit. They're protected by God, and prayers are more powerful than any spell or any curse. So that's why I think. And that's also why I think I remember putting those spells into my music so that if they're not affected by me doing that to them individually, then maybe I could get to them through music because they're avidly wanting to hear the music. So their free will allows them to invite that spell into their life. It's kind of like, well, you invited it in, or you opened the door. Because now I know that demons are very legalistic. The devil's very legalistic. He knows the word of God. He can only do really what the Lord allows him to. But there are laws and there are rules in this. And he'll take any advantage of your slip-ups to get to you. And that's why we're in a war, you know. It's an everyday battle. And he's always there. When you first become a Christian, it's not like your life from that point on is all puppy dogs, fluff, and rainbows. You enter the war. That's when your life truly begins. And it's a constant battle the whole way. So, you know, it's not going to immediately get better. At the start, it does. And I can say that because all my Christian friends' stories are the same. The first period of time, God gives you mercy and he gives you grace because you're ignorant in a lot of things. But once you start learning and once you start knowing, you're then accountable to start behaving in certain ways. And, you know, your test begins at that point.
So you're getting asked, next question is, what are your thoughts on Aleister Crowley? And I'll get a picture of him up there as well.
He was somebody I learned about around the time of Anton LaVey. And there was another one who wrote the Necronomicon. I forget his name. I read his works. Those were kind of just fantasy to me. I wasn't into necrophiliaism or necrophilia, you know, sex with dead bodies. That's a whole nother thing. Like, I wouldn't do that if you told me you'd bring me $1 million. No thanks. But Aleister Crowley, his works, his pyramid sigils, his, yes, I do remember learning about him and looking into it. But at the time, like, I didn't really care about these certain people, or if you wanted to call them idols or looking up to them, because what I had found worked. So I didn't need this person to tell me this or that, or this person to tell me this or that. I knew what I knew. So that's what I focused on at that time.
All right. So the next question is from Tracy. Christian, great show. How would you know, or what would the signs be, if someone has put a spell on you? How would a person know?
As an unbeliever, constant bad luck, destruction of your finances, your relationships. When you tend to see everything in your life crashing and failing, usually these things happen just naturally if God is calling you to them, because usually when people meet their breaking point, that's when they reach out to God, or in extreme desperation. Like, in some senses, I had to go through what I had to go through with nearly being killed. I know it sounds awful, but no one was ever going to be able to tell me about Jesus. I was that stubborn. I was that angry. I was that hateful. You're not going to come tell me about Jesus. I found the secret to life, and it's working, and it's working well. There's no way I would have paid any attention to the things of God. It brought me to that point where, I guess, kind of in a supernatural way, I was saved, or at least led to it. But as an unbeliever, how would you know you're cursed? If your misfortunes are happening to you after you had had a fight with somebody, or you had angered somebody purposefully, I guess would be the only indicator. But for me, that wasn't really the case, because I would leave no openness to that, right? I would treat everybody super nice. So if they mistreated me, I guess they wouldn't really be able to tell that easy, that it was me doing the curse against them. You kind of keep hidden. It's deception, which is, you know, number one in the devil's kingdom. But as a person, unbeliever, I really can't speak to that, because I've always been the one doing it. I wasn't the one receiving it. As a believer, it's kind of a different thing. When you're finding out misfortune after misfortune after misfortune, it could be an attack from the enemy, or it could be God taking you through things, because, you know, he brings us through things too, to learn and to grow and to get better. So it's kind of a different vibe, as a Christian versus being an unbeliever. And if you do believe you're cursed as a unbeliever, I just suggest turn to Jesus, because that's the only way that's going to stop it. So
Deirdre wants to know, how do you guide a Satanist out of Satanism? Would they just not listen to you?
So say that again.
How do you get someone out of Satanism? Can you guide them, or would they just not listen to you?
You would have, like, well, I can't do anything. Really, it's Jesus that does it. It's God that does it. They would have to come to the point in their life where their free will is focused on wanting to know God, because that's what it's all about. Like, you have to make that choice yourself. People might plant seeds and pray for you. I attribute, you know, my protection, even as an unbeliever, by God, because of my grandmother and my mom praying for me constantly my whole life. It's a hard thing to say, because, you know, I'm not God, but I could just imagine thinking about it. It takes that person to a point of breaking, I think. And that's why we evangelize. That's why we witness. You know, that's why I'm doing this, really. To be honest, anything that will lead somebody to the thought of God, that's our missions as believers. And I just want to say this, like, I'm not here to quote scripture. I'm not here to preach or anything like that. I'll just say this, and this is as honest as I can be. If you want to know if God is real, if Jesus is real, just ask him. Just ask him to show you that he is real. And I'm 100% confident that he will. So there's no worries on my end, because I trust him. So if you're praying for somebody, that's probably the best thing you can do. And God will work on that end.
Question from Nix. What did the demon write for you? And did you know the names of the demonic entities that surrounded, wished to take your soul?
Well, I don't know if those demons influenced the people that wanted to kill me, but I could imagine they were those two that I dealt with. Yeah, I did know their names. And so the first question.
So Nix is asking about what the demon wrote for you on the Ouija board, I believe.
Oh, how to perfect my spells. How to do them better is basically it. And I would ask some questions, you know. I would just grab some beer, you know. It's just like having like a buddy, but it's kind of was my AI before AI. I'm not saying AI is evil or anything, but it's kind of like a thing that knew everything that you could ask about. But looking back, all those things it told me were lies. So it would convince me that they're my friends, that what I'm doing is good, because this is the way the world works. I would ask it about planets. It would tell me, I would ask it about history, tell me that. Anything I pretty much wanted to know, really. But at that time, I just really wanted to know how to perfect my art, because there was no books, there was no knowledge about it other than those popular people at that time. And I had already exhausted that option. I found it to be not very realistic from what I saw.
And Scott wants to know if this entity that was speaking to you, did it have a name?
Yes.
Okay. A few people are asking about your 666 tattoos, whether you've thought about removing or altering them.
Yeah, I get that question a lot. Actually, I did my other interview was on the Almost False podcast, and I had a candle up here, and, you know, people were shouting from the rooftops, oh, he's evil, he's got a candle burning. Hate break to you, but candles by itself are not evil inherently. They are used in a lot of spells, yes, sure, but it was just to brighten up the room, if anybody watched that. And then the second one was, they would ask about my necklace, so I'm going to just get that out of the way right now. It's a cross with a mustard seed encased in glass with Matthew 17:20 on the back, just so people know, because I know that question is going to come up, or it's going to be in the comments for sure. Sorry, what was the question again? I'm bad at this, man. I'm sorry.
It was about your tattoos, altering or removing them.
Right. So, yeah, my tattoos. These ones, like, that's when I was into the Egyptian Book of the Dead. I will be removing that one. This one was in a dream. It's the first tattoo I got. I saw it in a dream. Don't know what it means, but there's a split onk in there. The 666 ones, I struggle with that one because I now know that obviously it holds no power over me. I'm a Christian now, so I'm not worried about them. The only thing is they've been a great witnessing tool. Like, I'll go out to the supermarket or in public and people see the six. And I remember one guy, he's like, "Oh, where's the other one?" I'm like, "Right here, man." And I start talking to him about Jesus. And that's happened quite a bit. So it's a good witnessing tool. It also kind of shows that I'm speaking when I'm speaking, because a lot of people, you know, their first tendency, it took me a long time to actually start to tell my testimony, because it sounds kind of out there. And people don't really believe me when I say these things. "Oh, you're a Satanist. Oh, okay." And I've been through that a lot, especially early on. And, you know, when I show them this, it's like, you know, well, I actually was. So in retrospect, though, I think there is going to be a time where I do get rid of these, because I just think it's proper. But it's a great reminder to me of the things that God has done for me and where he's taken me from. So. That's why they're there for now. And I usually cover them up sometimes, you know, when I can. But if it's hot and they're exposed because I'm wearing a t-shirt, that's when people usually ask me about them.
Next question is from DS. Are you ever tempted to use curses in situations now? And if so, how do you overcome that?
No. Simple question. If I were to ever turn back to my old ways, I'd probably be finished.
Okay, good answer. All right, so next question is from Orr. Have you ever been reached out to by a Christian in the spirit?
I'm not sure what that means.
I'm not sure what that means either. Can you please rephrase that, like, question? Or I'm not sure exactly.
Like, God brings people into my life who are Christians, and that's because of the Holy Spirit. But if you're talking about an actual disembodied spirit that connects us, no, that's not a Christian thing. But God brings Christians into my life all the time, for sure.
Next question is, other than with the tells in music videos, how do we know when music has dark spells in them?
Oh, that's a good question. That is a good question. Because they're in a lot of music that people wouldn't necessarily think that, like, this poppy, sunshiny music has spells in them. I would just encourage you to read the lyrics again. If there are lyrics that don't make sense at all to the entire song, or they rhyme, especially four bars, or three threes, or even a six, a one and a six, if you're musically inclined, I'm sure you know that. But it's more about if the lyric seems dark and evil, and it rhymes, or it is totally out of place with the whole song, I would probably lean towards that's a spell. And it takes a lot for me to say that, because, you know, I don't want to cause like a paranoia in people. Oh, this musician's evil. This musician's evil. You can also look into the artist. Like, say, for example, Taylor Swift. She said that someone handled one of her songs and wrote it for her, and it seems scary to her. Almost like he was using manifestation. Lady Gaga, she's straight up said, "This is a spell in my song." Like, these artists, they're prideful, right? So they will admit it at some point. And as soon as you hear that, just get away from it. Because music is very powerful. It's very spiritual. That's what I'm focusing on now, is actually making Christian music. That's a different thing, but it's because there's power in words. In the Bible, it says death and life are in the power of the tongue. That's Proverbs 18:21. And in the beginning, in Genesis 1, in the beginning, God spoke. He spoke into existence, the thing that exists. So that certain vibration that he made is the same vibrations that are used in music, in sound. Sound is very, very powerful. In some rituals and some incantations, you sing these, you hum them. In some meditations, through astral projection, you use, I hope this isn't a hidden thing, but you use Om. It's a certain pattern of voice that you repeat over and over and over. And there's a lot of things that mirror that in music. Courses, they repeat. They get stuck in your head. They're catchy. You can wake up and find yourself singing a song that you heard 2 days ago, and it's just running through your mind, running through tomorrow. It's because it's connecting to you through that vibrational pattern. There's a sticking there. So, you know, just be very careful of what you listen to, who you listen to, find out their history, read the lyrics, and just, you know, don't sing along to things that you don't know what they're actually saying, is my tip.
You got a few people asking whether you think Diddy was into the occult.
Probably, most likely, yeah. Thing, all right, if what they tell us he did what he did, I mean, I have no idea, right? That they only say what we hear, but it sounds very dark and satanic, yeah.
All right, Woman's Warrior is asking about her son. I think you should email Christian. His email is in the description box below this video.
Yeah,
so you can discuss that directly. His email's there, and his YouTube channel link is there as well. I'll put them in the live chat again now. You've answered all the questions, man. Is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion to the viewers?
No, just thank you for all of you for being here. I hope you got something from it. I'm just a guy living in the country in a trailer down by the river. You know, I'm no one special, really. Just been through a lot, and even my channel's not a big channel. I don't really want to promote it at all. I like my little corner of YouTube, and the people there have been there from the beginning. So I like to reply to each and every comment. So if it does get bigger, I'm going to find myself even more busy. So, I mean, I'm joking, but yeah, it's just the message where God has brought me from into the place where he brought me today. I feel that it is my duty to share it. And as long as I'm still breathing and still have life, I will continue to do so, because there's nothing better and nothing more worthy than giving glory to God, Jesus Christ.
Christian, you're such a genuine person. You've been through hell. We appreciate you coming on and sharing the story. So we wish you all the best. And I would urge the viewers to subscribe to Christian. And if you want to reach out, his email address is in the description box as well. So I'm going to let you go and close the show, my friend. And thank you for spending this time with us. You take care.
Great. Thank you, sir. God bless you all.
God bless. Cheers, Christian. Thank you. Thanks for all the questions, viewers. Fascinating story. I'll just let everybody know what we've got coming up in the next few days. Shane has got, let's see, tomorrow, was there a second shooter on Charlie Kirk coming up tomorrow at 9 p.m.? I'll be doing that one. I saw Candace Owens. There's a gag order now on people reporting on Charlie Kirk and on 3,000 witnesses, etc. And Candace has announced, don't worry, world, I will be breaking the gag order. So Barbara's coming back with Paula M. That is tomorrow at, is that 9:30? Let's see. Yes, yeah, so if that's at 9:30, and we've got the Charlie Kirk one. Charlie Kirk one must be at, oh, that's down as 9. We have to fix that. Perhaps that should be 8. All right. And then we've got the following morning, French model Laurie Marsden exposes elites, including Jean-Luc Brunel, Epstein, Girard, over there in France. And then we've got Ryan Dawson coming on to talk about the further Prince Andrew revelations, Virginia's book, Epstein, Maxwell. Ryan Dawson's coming on Saturday at 1 p.m. UK time. So tons more content coming your way. Thanks for tuning in.
Take care wherever you are in the world. Stay away from the Ouija.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. Social Casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered, like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right, because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup, and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.